Hey, Mark here, and this is another commentary and analysis on how we miss the point on school shootings. These commentaries are all about the research, inspiration, and ideas that go into each of these posts, so if you want to learn more about the posts, then you should check out these audios. So this article, honestly, this article is probably the most difficult one for me to talk about. It was one of the most difficult articles for me to write on the site, and it was also one of the most difficult ones for me to deal with. It's kind of obvious why. The subject matter is not exactly like cheery Sunday afternoon subject matter. But I guess the best way to start this is to give a little bit of background about like my own thinking on this subject. So the first thing to get out of the way, I guess, is for some reason, I don't know why, I've always had a very strange fascination with the Columbine shooting. I had that fascination when it happened. A number of school shootings happened in the 90s, but for some reason there was something about Columbine that like captured everybody's attention and imagination. And I remember at the time reading quite a bit about it. And as the years went on, I would go into these weird phases where I would kind of like circle back and, you know, read some more research or follow up on what had happened. And so the timing was very coincidental that I had just finished reading a new book, I believe by a guy named Dave Cullen, about Columbine. It had just come out a few months prior, and I believe it was the first book that where the author had open access to the families of the shooters and the families of the victims. And it's a pretty heavy read, as you can imagine. What's interesting though is that the book kind of dispels a lot of myths and assumptions about the kids, the shooters, which I found very interesting. And it talks about, just to give a couple quick examples, both the kids had a pretty normal nuclear families. Their parents were involved in their lives. They weren't popular at school, but they weren't total outcasts. They weren't bullied. They weren't like, they had friends, they had prom dates. They weren't like hardcore into, you know, Marilyn Manson or goth culture or anything like that. The book really kind of just breaks down that you had kind of this perfect storm of, a kid, Eric Harris, who was pretty clearly a psychopath, and, his friend, Dylan Klebold, who was likely a manic depressive and who hid it from his family, like a lot of teenagers do. Who just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time together, with the wrong influences and access to guns and weapons and whatnot. And then not even 2 weeks later, after finishing the book, the Elliot Rodger thing happened. And again, the Elliot Rodger thing, like, you know, probably once a year. I mean, we have shootings so often now. And it's sad, but it's reached the point where it's like the shootings, we kind of don't even pay attention to them anymore. We're just kind of like, oh yeah, another shooting. That's terrible. Like, unless there's something very unique or specific about the shooting, it doesn't really grab our attention. And the thing about the Elliot Rodger shooting was he left videos online, and his own rationale for his behavior included a lot of sexism and anger towards women in general. And so that sparked, you know, another huge flurry of everything. And I just kind of, I don't know, like the Elliot Rodger thing in particular, it hit a little bit of a nerve. It turns out that he was highly active in a lot of forums in like the pickup artist community, and he used to buy and read books. I have some connections to that industry because I also have a dating book. And so I know people in that industry were freaking out. A lot of people like checked their email lists, make sure he wasn't on it, you know, they just didn't want to be linked to him in any way. And I guess it just got me thinking, the combination of reading that book, the Columbine book, at the time that I did, and kind of having my perspective changed a little bit about it, about these shootings. And then just the fact that the Elliot Rodger thing was so kind of pointed in my own, I wouldn't say backyard, like I don't really have any like loyalty or identification with the dating industry or the pickup artist industry or whatever. But it's, you know, as a guy who struggled with dating myself and found myself on some of those same forums that he was on and probably reading some of the same books that he read, like it just felt very weird. It felt very gross. And so I felt like I really wanted to write about it. The other factor in this too, and this has always been a big inspiration for me in a lot of the articles I write, I get very, very inspired when I feel like there's something important that needs to be said and nobody's saying it. And in this case, I really felt like I was just getting sick of feeling like these shootings were just getting co-opted for people's own political or pet causes over and over again. You know, so people who are against gun ownership, you know, use them to push gun control, and people who have huge problems with the mental health system use it to push greater mental health care, and people who are against you know, whatever, sexism, use it to push against sexism, and the list goes on and on. And yeah, there's a lot of credible points to all these issues, and I say that in the article. Like, yeah, there's probably an issue with the gun laws in the U.S. That's very different from saying that we need to get rid of all guns or whatever, like, because that's what the dialogue inevitably turns into. It turns into some, like, extreme caricature of what the actual problem is. There's clearly problems with the healthcare system, mental healthcare system in the U.S. as well. That's obvious. But I think the extra step of logic that people don't take is that, you know, guns are freely available in places like Switzerland or Israel, yet you don't have these mass shootings happening every 2-3 months. Mental health care is a problem in a number of other countries. You also have probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people in the U.S. who also struggle with mental health problems and are not diagnosed and are not treated, yet they are not going around and killing people. To me, it became clear that this is a cultural issue. This only happens in the U.S. It doesn't happen anywhere else, even though other places have similar systemic problems. This is a cultural problem. There is something in American culture that causes people to do this. It is a side effect of some cultural trait of ours. And I didn't dig into what that cultural trait is. That's actually a topic for another article I want to write one day. I just tried to very forcefully and logically and compassionately make that point that there's something sick in our culture that is driving a very small minority of people to do this and think it's okay. There's a really, really, really great article written by Malcolm Gladwell. I think it was written for The New Yorker. It came out about a year after this. It came out in 2015 after another shooting, where Malcolm Gladwell actually took the time. Honestly, I think it's the best and most definitive article written on shootings ever. If you Google it, it's called The Threshold of Violence, I believe. Thresholds of Violence. But basically the point that he makes in that article, through a lot of psychological research or referencing a lot of psychological research, is that if you think in terms of like a riot, usually when riots start, it's not because, you know, you have 10,000 people that want to start breaking stuff. What happens is that you have a group of 10,000 people and you have maybe 10 people who want to start breaking stuff. And because of the situation that they find themselves, they think it's okay. The key to a riot is not that those 10 people that want to break stuff, because those 10 people who want to break stuff are probably, you know, violent individuals who always want to break stuff. No, the key to a riot is those people who only feel okay breaking stuff, when other people are breaking stuff first. And it's this copycat syndrome. And so what you see with things like suicide and, terrorism and school shootings, a lot of these kind of very violent acts, is that there's a, most of these people out there, they probably wouldn't otherwise resort to these kinds of extreme forms of violence. But what happens is because other people start first, it becomes culturally acceptable in a way. It's like people in a riot. It's like, okay, I'm not going to break anything, but if somebody next to me starts breaking stuff, then suddenly I feel okay doing it too. It feels acceptable. And Gladwell actually cites a number of the shooters who say that they look up to Eric Harris and that he set the blueprint, and that they probably wouldn't have thought to do it otherwise. And so what we have here is we have this like cultural meme. It's a very toxic, kind of cancerous meme that's floating through the culture that, if you're feeling disaffected and angry and have violent tendencies, this is a rewarding way to go about it. And that reward is not conscious or intentional. The reward is mainly played out through attention, notoriety, and the fame. And a lot of people say like, oh, well, that's a stupid explanation. You know, these people aren't just looking for fame. But the truth is like they don't understand that when you take a mind of somebody who's so miserable that they're willing to kill themselves or end their own life, fame and infamy it seems like a reasonable bargain for them. You know, it's like, why just kill myself, and die anonymously when I can make a huge impact, and make society remember me and fear me and remain notorious for decades to come. You know, like that was pretty much Eric Harris's conscious reasoning into what he did. And it's played out perfectly. It's played out beautifully. Like he wrote in his journals, he said, I want to set the standard. I want people to come after me and try to live up to what I do. And it's totally happened. It's happened exactly the way he planned. So I guess it's, I'm extremely proud of this article. It went very viral. I felt weird about writing it because I always feel weird about trying to like capitalize on bad news or people's pain for my own like website's traffic or whatever. But like, I felt strongly enough about the message of this article that like I said, a big inspiration for me is when I feel like something needs to be said and nobody's saying it. And so I felt very strongly with this one, had a huge reaction, hundreds of thousands of shares and follows. It's come up again too. It's funny that the article kind of dies and disappears most of the time, but then every once in a while when there's another shooting, it kind of gets revived a little bit, as people start passing it around again. The amount of email from this one was extremely intense, to the point where like emotionally it did a number on me. It punched me in the face a few times, afterwards. I got a lot of emails from, both sides of the political spectrum, both sides being angry, both sides being grateful, which, you know, whenever I write about a politically sensitive issue, a very conscious goal of mine is to write it in such a way that, nobody can really pinpoint where my views are. I don't know if that's just silly, but for some reason I feel it's important to do that. And so I'm always very pleased when I write something that's kind of politically charged like this, and I get both liberals angry at me and conservatives angry at me, and I get emails of praise both from liberals and conservatives. You know, so I had gun rights people thanking me. I had mental health rights people thanking me. I had gun rights people pissed off at me. I had mental health people pissed off at me. It's, you know, whatever. That's that to me, as jarring of an experience as that is, going through those emails, to me, that's a sign of success. What was actually a lot more taxing was, you know, the article spread far and wide enough that I actually got a number of emails from survivors of both the Elliot Rodger shooting and the Columbine shooting. People who were there, not people who were like shot, but like people who were there and were potentially in danger. To varying degrees. I also got a number of emails from law enforcement people. Got an email from a SWAT team guy who had actually been in a number of like active shooter situations such as these. And so it was just very intense. I would say overall the reaction to the article was very positive and very grateful, and I'm grateful for that. But a lot of it, there's a lot of emotion mixed in as well. So a lot of people were very angry and hurt. there was one guy from Columbine who emailed me and told me I had no fucking clue what I was talking about. You know, maybe that's true. Who knows? But I also had, I got a number of emails from enough other people who have been involved in these types of situations, that were very supportive as well. So, you know, ultimately, it's just my view on a very controversial situation and a very touchy topic. And so I very consciously try not to get too caught up in how wrong or right I am or, you know, whatever. It's something that I feel very strongly about, and I want to put it out there, and if it turns out I'm wrong, or if I kind of make a fool of myself to some people, like, that's okay. That's what, the only thing that's not okay is not contributing to the conversation. But overall, I feel good about the response. And the last thing I'll say is that, I mean, you can probably notice if you listen to a bunch of these audios, this is probably the least jovial I've been, this article, it still weighs on me. It's one of the only articles on the site that I make a point not to go back and read. And that I have no interest in rereading. It's kind of like I'm ready to put it to bed. And when these shootings happen now, it's, I've kind of gone from this, like, being outraged and, you know, all like that process of emotions that most of us go through outrage and sadness and grief and confusion. And sadly, these days, I kind of have this, a very solemn acceptance of, you know, this is probably it's probably a problem that's going to span decades before it stops. And it's not going to stop from any single policy change. It's going to stop from a cultural shift, and cultural shifts take a long time and require a lot of work on a lot of levels. So that may sound pessimistic, but it's really not. It's just, that's just what it is. And honestly, I don't have any strong negative feelings towards that. You know, I think every generation has its violent struggles or kind of cancerous traits that it has to deal with and root out of itself. And this is one of ours. So, we just have to do the best we can.